Welcome to this deep dive, into bacteria.
Oh,
It's
yeah.
going to be a fascinating one, I think.
For
We're
sure.
using a companion guide that goes along with a university-level microbiology course.
Wow.
So we're really going to get into some nitty-gritty stuff here.
I love it.
We're going to be talking about, some of the things that you're probably familiar with, like Streptococcus and
Right.
Salmonella and all that.
Yeah.
But we're also going to be looking at how scientists can actually identify these things
Oh, wow.
under a microscope.
Cool.
And we're even going to be looking at how sewage treatment plants are battling antibiotic resistance.
That's so interesting. It's really fascinating because it directly affects your health and the world around you. And it's not just theoretical stuff, especially now, with antibiotic resistance being on the rise, understanding bacteria and antibiotics is more important than ever, I think.
For sure.
Okay.
Let's get into it.
Let's do it.
First up, we have the bacterial blueprint. So this is like their basic operating system.
Gotcha.
And you might remember the central dogma of molecular biology.
Yeah.
DNA makes RNA, RNA makes protein.
Yep.
Bacteria follow those same rules, but they
Yeah.
do it all in their cytoplasm because they don't have a nucleus like our cells do.
That's right. And what's really cool is that they can actually start building proteins from their RNA before the RNA is even finished being made.
What?
Talk about efficiency, right?
Wow, that's wild.
It's like baking a cake while you're still mixing the batter.
Exactly. So they're very streamlined
They are
when it comes to making proteins.
very much so.
But how does that help us in terms of trying to fight them?
Well, knowing how bacteria function helps us figure out how to disrupt those processes. So, for instance, some antibiotics work by targeting the ribosomes, which are like the protein factories of the bacteria. If we can stop the factories, we can stop the bacteria from growing.
Okay, so let's zoom in now on the bacterial architecture. So this is the structure of these teeny tiny cells. They have some key parts. They've got a capsule for protection.
Like a suit of armor.
Exactly. They've got flagella.
For swimming around.
Yeah, like little propellers.
Little tiny propellers.
Exactly. DNA as their instruction manual.
Right.
Ribosomes for building the proteins
Yep.
and membranes to keep everything in check.
To hold it all together.
But I'm guessing not all bacteria are built the same.
You're right about that. One of the most important distinctions is between gram-positive and gram-negative bacteria. They differ in the structure of their cell walls. And this difference is key for understanding how some antibiotics work. It's like knowing whether a castle has thick stone walls or like a flimsy wooden fence.
I'm intrigued. Tell me more about this difference.
Right, so gram-positive bacteria have a thick layer of peptidoglycan in their cell wall. So you can imagine this as like a sturdy brick wall. Gram-negative bacteria, on the other hand, have a thinner peptidoglycan layer and an extra outer membrane. So more like a wooden fence with a layer of barbed wire on top. And this difference in structure affects how easily antibiotics can penetrate the cell.
So some antibiotics are better at breaking down brick walls, and others are better at getting through barbed wire.
Exactly. That's a great analogy. So, for example, penicillin, a very famous antibiotic, works by disrupting the formation of that peptidoglycan. So it's much more effective against gram-positive bacteria because they have more of that peptidoglycan to target. It's like having a battering ram that's really good at smashing through brick walls, but not so good at getting through barbed wire.
Wow, this is fascinating.
It is.
So knowing your enemy, in this case, whether it's a brick wall bacterium or a barbed wire bacterium, is really important for choosing the right weapon.
It is.
So let's talk about those weapons, the antibiotics themselves.
Yeah.
They're like our microscopic arsenal, right?
They are.
But I know they've got different ways of attacking bacteria.
Absolutely. You can think of antibiotics as specialized agents, each designed to exploit a specific weakness in the bacteria. Some antibiotics are like assassins. They directly kill the bacteria. These are called bactericidal antibiotics. Others are more like jailers. They prevent the bacteria from growing and multiplying, but they don't necessarily kill them. These are called bacteriostatic antibiotics.
Okay, so some go for the kill and others just put them on lockdown.
Exactly.
And I bet they've got some pretty ingenious ways of doing that.
They do.
What are some of their targets?
Well, we already talked about how some antibiotics, like penicillin, target the cell wall, but there are others as well. So, for instance, some antibiotics, like the polymyxins, target the bacterial cell membrane. They basically poke holes in the membrane, causing the cell to leak its contents and die.
So it's like puncturing their armor.
Exactly.
That sounds pretty effective.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing there are some downsides to that approach.
There are. Polymyxins can be a bit of a double-edged sword.
Okay.
Because they can also be toxic to our own cells.
Right.
So they're kind of like using a cannon to attack a castle.
Okay.
You might take down the castle walls.
Right.
But you might also cause some collateral damage to the surrounding area.
Yeah, you don't want friendly fire.
Exactly. So doctors typically use them as a last resort.
Okay.
When other antibiotics have failed.
Makes sense. So besides this cell wall and the membrane, what other targets are there?
Well, some antibiotics go after those ribosomes.
Okay.
Those protein factories we talked about earlier.
Right.
Amino glycosides are a prime example.
Okay.
They bind to the ribosomes and mess with their ability to build proteins, essentially shutting down the factory.
Wow. Okay.
Then you've got antibiotics that interfere with DNA and RNA cytosis.
Okay.
So, for example, quinolones like ciprofloxacin, which is often used for urinary tract infections,
mm-hmm.
work by disrupting DNA replication.
Wow. So they're messing with the bacteria's instruction manual.
Exactly.
That's wild.
And then there are even antibiotics that disrupt the synthesis of essential metabolites.
Okay.
Which are like the building blocks that bacteria need to survive.
Gotcha.
Sulfa drugs are a good example.
Right.
They explain the differences in how bacteria and humans make these crucial molecules,
right.
essentially starving the bacteria without harming us.
It's incredible how many different ways we've figured out how to attack these things.
It is.
But with all these clever strategies, you know, how are bacteria becoming resistant to antibiotics?
Right. It's a serious concern. And unfortunately, bacteria are incredibly adaptable.
Yeah.
The alarming statistic is that 1 in 4 bacterial infections in Canada are already resistant to antibiotics.
Wow, that's scary.
It is. They've evolved some sneaky ways to fight back, and we'll dive into those next.
Okay, I'm ready.
Let's do it. Yeah, it's a constant arms race.
Right.
And bacteria have some impressive defenses.
Yeah.
One way they become resistant is by decreasing their permeability.
Okay.
It's like they're beefing up security, making it harder for the antibiotics to even get inside.
So they're locking down the fortress.
Exactly.
How do they do that?
Well, they can reduce the number of porin proteins in their outer membrane.
Okay.
And these proteins act like tiny doorways that allow molecules,
right.
including antibiotics, to pass through.
Gotcha.
By reducing the number of doorways, they make it much harder for antibiotics to get inside and do their job.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
What other tricks do they have up their sleeve?
Well, another strategy is to modify the target.
Okay.
So antibiotics work by binding to specific targets within the bacterial cell.
Right.
Those ribosomes or enzymes we talked about.
Right.
But bacteria can mutate, changing the shape of these targets.
Oh.
So the antibiotic can no longer bind effectively.
Okay.
It's like changing the locks on your door so the old key no longer fits.
So they're constantly evolving to outsmart us.
They are. It's a microscopic battle of wits.
Wow. Are there any other defense mechanisms?
Oh, yeah. They have more.
Okay.
Some bacteria develop enzymes that can actually break down the antibiotics. For example, some bacteria produce enzymes called beta-lactamases,
okay.
which can break down beta-lactam antibiotics like penicillin.
So it's like having a tiny army of soldiers that can dismantle our weapons.
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
They've even got a way to kick the antibiotics out of the cell.
What?
Some bacteria have what are called efflux pumps,
okay.
which are like tiny pumps that actively remove antibiotics from the cell.
All right.
Imagine a castle with a system of trapdoors that can quickly eject intruders.
These bacteria are like microscopic escape artists.
They are.
It's incredible how they've evolved to survive all of our attacks.
It is amazing.
But if bacteria are so good at hiding and evolving, how do scientists even identify them in the first place?
Right. Well, it's a bit like being a microbial detective.
Oh.
Scientists use a combination of methods, but we can break them down into 2 main categories.
Okay.
Phenotypic and genotypic.
Okay.
Phenotypic methods focus on what you can observe about the bacteria,
yeah.
like their color or how they grow. Genotypic methods, on the other hand, look at the bacteria's genes, their DNA blueprint.
So phenotypic is like looking at their outward appearance, and genotypic is like looking under the hood.
Exactly. A great way to put it.
Okay. What are some examples of those phenotypic methods?
Well, one of the most basic tools is the microscope.
Okay.
With a microscope, you can see the basic shapes of bacteria.
Okay.
Cocci are round, like tiny balls.
Yeah.
Bacilli are rod shaped like tiny sticks.
Right.
And then you have the spiral shaped bacteria, which look like tiny corkscrews.
Wow.
With special stains, you can even see structures like flagella.
Oh, cool.
And endospores.
Okay.
Which are these tough, dormant forms that some bacteria can produce to survive harsh conditions.
So we can actually see these tiny structures.
We can.
That's amazing. But But how can scientists tell different bacteria apart just by looking at them?
Right. Well, that's where the Gram stain comes in.
Okay.
It's a special staining technique that takes advantage of the differences in the cell wall structure we talked about earlier.
Right.
Gram-positive bacteria stain purple, while gram-negative bacteria stain pink or red.
Oh!
It's a simple test, but it provides valuable information about the type of bacteria we're dealing with.
So it's like color-coding them.
Exactly.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing there's more to bacterial identification than just shapes and colors?
You're right. Scientists also use biochemical tests to see how bacteria interact with different substances.
Right.
These tests can reveal a lot about a bacterium's metabolic capabilities, which is kind of like figuring out its dietary preferences and lifestyle.
So what kind of tests are we talking about?
So, for example, the catalase test checks if a bacterium produces an enzyme called catalase.
Okay.
If it does, when you add hydrogen peroxide, it creates bubbles.
Oh, fun.
It's a fun one to watch.
So we can tell what a bacterium is by whether or not it makes bubbles.
One of the clues.
Science is so cool. What other tests are there?
Well, there's the oxidase test, which looks for the presence of certain enzymes involved in respiration. And there's the indole test, which checks if a bacterium can break down a particular amino acid.
Gotcha.
Each test provides a clue about the bacterium's identity.
It's like a puzzle. Each test gives you another piece.
Right.
But I bet these tests still have their limitations.
They do. Phenotypic methods can be helpful, but they don't always provide a definitive answer.
Right.
That's where genotypic methods like DNA sequencing come in.
Oh, okay.
DNA sequencing allows scientists to look at the bacteria's genes,
right,
their unique genetic code.
It's like reading their fingerprints.
Exactly.
Okay, so DNA sequencing, that's some high-tech stuff.
Mm.
How does that work for bacteria?
Well, there are different techniques, but one commonly used method is called 16S rRNA gene sequencing.
Okay.
This gene is found in all bacteria, and it has regions that are highly conserved, meaning they're very similar across different species, and regions that are variable, meaning they differ between species.
Gotcha.
By sequencing this gene, scientists can identify bacteria with a high degree of accuracy.
So it's like comparing their genetic ID cards.
Exactly.
That's pretty amazing.
Right.
But with all this fancy DNA technology, why even bother with the old school phenotypic tests?
That's a great question. While DNA sequencing is powerful, it can be time-consuming and expensive.
Right.
Phenotypic tests are often quicker and cheaper, especially in clinical settings where you need a fast diagnosis to start treatment.
Makes sense.
So they're kind of like a first-line screening tool.
Gotcha. So we've covered how bacteria function, how antibiotics target them, how they develop resistance, and how scientists identify these tiny organisms.
They have.
But how does all of this connect to the real world?
Right.
I'm curious about that sewage treatment plant study you mentioned.
That's a perfect example of how we can track antibiotic resistance in the environment.
Yeah, yeah.
The researchers use a special type of growth media called McConkie agar, which is both selective and differential.
Okay.
Let me explain what that means.
Okay, I'm all ears.
Selective media only allows certain types of bacteria to grow. In the case of McConkie agar, it selects for gram-negative bacteria,
right,
which are a common type of bacteria found in the intestines of humans and animals.
Gotcha.
Differential media allow you to distinguish between different types of bacteria based on how they grow.
Okay.
McConkie agar contains lactose and a pH indicator.
Okay.
If a bacterium can ferment lactose, it produces acid.
Right.
Which changes the color of the pH indicator.
There's like a two-step verification process.
Exactly.
First, it checks if you're gram negative, and then it sees if you can handle lactose.
Pretty clever.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
But how does this help with antibiotic resistance?
Well, they added antibiotics to the McConkie agar.
Okay.
This way, only bacteria that were resistant to those specific antibiotics could grow.
Gotcha.
By comparing the number of bacteria growing on plates with and without antibiotics, they could see how prevalent antibiotic resistance was.
Okay.
In both raw sewage and treated sewage.
So it's like a bacterial obstacle course.
It is.
Only the strong survive.
Only the resistant ones survive.
Right. That's a clever way to track the problem.
It is. And the good news is that the studies show that sewage treatment does reduce the number of resistant bacteria.
Well, that's good.
That's a win for public health.
That is a win for public health.
But now let's shift gears a bit and delve into how scientists actually grow bacteria in the lab.
Okay.
Because it's more than just giving them food and water.
Yeah, I'm picturing those little bacterial colonies just multiplying away.
They are.
I'm ready to dive into the world of bacterial growth media.
All right, let's do it.
So it's like they have their own little gourmet meals, aren't they?
Exactly. They're very particular about what they eat.
So tell me about what goes into these bacterial buffets.
Well, there are two main types of growth media.
Okay.
Chemically defined and complex media.
Okay.
Chemically defined media are like a minimalist meal with every ingredient precisely measured.
Okay.
We know the exact amount of each nutrient, like glucose for energy, and specific amino acids for building proteins.
So it's like a really controlled diet plan for picky eaters.
Exactly. It's all about precision.
What about complex media?
Complex media are more like a hearty stew with a mix of ingredients like yeast extract, meat extract, or peptones.
Oh.
We know it's got all sorts of good stuff in there.
Yeah.
But we don't know the exact amounts of each nutrient.
So chemically defined is like a simple salad, and complex is like a loaded pizza.
A perfect analogy.
I get it. But I imagine scientists don't just randomly choose which media to use.
You're absolutely right.
There's got to be a reason behind it.
The choice of media depends on what the scientists are trying to achieve.
Okay.
Sometimes they want to grow as many different types of bacteria as possible.
Right.
So they'll use a general purpose media that's not too picky.
Gotcha.
Other times they might be looking for a specific type of bacteria.
Right.
So they'll use a selective media that only allows that type to grow.
It's like setting up a specific environment to attract the bacteria they're interested in.
Exactly. Can you give me an example?
Sure. Let's say we're trying to isolate Salmonella bacteria from a food sample.
Okay.
Salmonella is a nasty bug that can cause food poisoning.
It is.
And we want to be able to identify it quickly and easily.
Right.
We can use a selective media called bismuth sulfite agar.
Okay.
This media contains ingredients that inhibit the growth of most other bacteria, giving Salmonella a competitive advantage.
It's like creating a VIP lounge just for Salmonella.
That's pretty clever.
Yeah.
But what if you want to do more than just select for certain bacteria?
Right.
What if you want to be able to tell the difference between different types that are growing on the same plate?
That's where differential media come in.
Okay.
These media contain ingredients that allow you to visually differentiate between different types of bacteria based on how they grow.
Got it.
Remember that McConkey agar we talked about earlier?
Right. The lactose fermenters turn the media pink.
Exactly.
So it's like a built-in identification system.
It is. And it's incredibly useful for all sorts of applications.
So growing bacteria is about so much more than just providing food. It's about creating a customized environment to answer specific questions.
It is.
But I have to ask, we've talked about how scientists use specialized growth media to identify bacteria.
Right.
And to track antibiotic resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other applications for this technology?
Well, what's exciting is that specialized growth media have the potential to go far beyond those applications.
Okay.
For example, they could be used to develop new antibiotics.
Really?
By tweaking the ingredients in the media, we can create environments that encourage the growth of bacteria.
Okay.
That produce antibiotic compounds.
But we can use bacteria to fight bacteria.
Exactly. We can harness their power for good.
That's incredible.
It really highlights the potential of these microscopic organisms.
Yeah.
They're not just threats to our health.
Right.
They can also be powerful allies in the fight against disease.
Wow. This has been such an incredible journey.
It has.
Yeah, we started with those basic building blocks of bacteria.
Right.
And moved all the way to how scientists identify them and grow them.
We did.
And we even looked at, you know, how they develop resistance to antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
And how we can track this growing threat.
That's a big problem.
It is. But I think most importantly, we've seen how these tiny organisms can have such a huge impact on our world.
They do. Sometimes the most important discoveries come from understanding the smallest forms of life.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the fascinating world of bacteria.
It's been my pleasure.
We hope you learned something new and exciting.
Me too.
And that you'll continue to explore the wonders of the microscopic world.
Until next time, keep those curiosity gears turning.